you talked about why it is so important, why it's important for people to understand what happens in batterer's intervention and what the possibilities are and what the possibilities aren't.
As I mentioned, for a number of years, I ran batterer's intervention programs, and it occurred to me that the partners of the people who were in the program didn't really know what was going on in those groups, and I wanted them to know. And it really sort of crystallized for me because one evening as I was getting ready to go into my group, I saw the wife of one of the men in my groups in the car with her two kids. And it was the winter time. It was cold. The car was running. And these were two little tiny kids, right? So here she was waiting in the car with it running on a very cold night in the Midwest for her husband to come out of a two-hour group, hoping, obviously, that he was going to make some change and that she could keep her family together and that they would be safe and they would be happy, right? This was obviously more important to her than almost anything, right? You know, to bring your kids out in the cold and wait in the car. But he was in the group. While she's out there waiting for him in the cold, he was in there talking about how fat she was and how dumb she was and just making disparaging comments about her and about women. And I thought, you know, I wish there was a way that I could talk to the partners of these men, not their actual partners, but in general, right? In a general way, about what really goes on in these groups. Are the chances good? Are the chances bad? Is there no hope whatsoever of change? So that women could have a chance to really make a decision about whether they wanted to stay. Mm-hmm. And I gave them little ways to think about what their partners would say and would do that would help alert them to the fact that maybe he was changing or maybe he wasn't changing. So I just want them to have some guide, because batterer's intervention seems like a big mystery, I'm sure, to most victims, right? It's like, what are you talking about in there? And are you going to fix him? And are you going to change him? And what's it going to take? Those are complicated questions, but they deserved, I thought, some kind of answer to that.
Okay. It sounds like it's kind of becomes a locker room sort of experience where the men are just kind of sitting around and whatever happens in locker rooms.
It can be that, right? That you need a skilled facilitator, which I was not for about 5 years, to make sure that it doesn't become that, because that's a risk, right?
Okay.
Right. It has to. You want people to feel free to talk about what they really feel and want and believe. But you also, it has to be done respectfully, and you have to model for people, right, what respect looks like.
You know, hearing this at this point in where we are right now, Donald Trump just keeps coming to mind and coming to mind over and over.
Yes. Right, it's been really difficult. I mean, for those of us who work in this field and who are have tried to, you know, make lives that are about respecting people and giving people a chance to grow and develop, it's really hard to hear the kinds of things that presidential candidates say. Disparaging comments about women and little nicknames for people, you know, what is it, goofy and, you know, crooked and crazy. And it's very difficult to say to a man in a batterer's intervention group, look, we want you to be respectful of people. Don't call people names. Don't put people down. Don't try to dominate everyone. Don't try to control everyone, when they can see plain as day that that works really, really well, right? If you want to be president of the United States, then if you do more of that, you're going to be successful. It's a really hard message that we have to sell. Respect, concern, empathy, when all over the world stage, there are people who were doing the exact opposite of that who seem to be succeeding. So we have our work cut out for us.
I'm talking to Pam Wiseman, who is the head of the Coalition Against Domestic Violence in New Mexico. Welcome to Women's Focus.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
Well, there's a lot of things to think about and a lot of things to work on in New Mexico about domestic violence. But one of the things that I'm interested in is batterer's treatment and where we stand with that, because we worked really hard, a lot of groups in New Mexico, to get batterer's treatment going and to get it to be something that was significant. You have to commit a year to it. So what's happening with that now?
Well, the first thing I guess I'd like to say is that batterer's intervention programs really play an important role in the overall system. Most victims of domestic violence want their partners to get better. They don't want their partners to go to jail necessarily. They don't want to see the family torn apart. What they really want is to be able to live with that person in a way that's safe and healthy. And so Batters Intervention provides that opportunity for families, and I think it's important that we find ways to make sure that we can continue to do that work and that we are constantly learning how to do it better.
Okay. One of the things that I have been interested in with intervention is that the first thing they focus on is getting the batterer to understand what he's been doing or to accept what he's been doing, and that they use a lot of peer sort of back and forth so that they can learn from other men who are in the same position. And I thought that sounded like a good idea.
So, you know, I in another time and place, I ran batters intervention groups. Oh. I did it for, I don't know, close to 15 years, actually, two or three times a week. So I have a lot of experience with this. And I can say that it's true that if you were to go into a room of people who'd been convicted of domestic violence and they were ordered to a batters intervention group, and you said, how many of you do not belong in this room because you didn't do anything wrong? All hands would go in the air. Because most people either really believe or say that they believe that what they did was either justifiable or never happened at all. So that's a pretty big hill to climb for people who run these programs, right? And so, yes, that's the first step, to get people to really think about what they did, what the purpose of that behavior really was, and most important, what the effects were on the family, on their children, and on themselves. And one thing I just want to mention about that is that there was a research study that the Texas Family Violence Council did some years ago, and they asked people who were convicted of domestic violence what made the difference for them in terms of changing. And there were three messages, really, that mattered to them. And the first was, your children are suffering. This was really important. Most of the people that I saw in my groups thought, well, I was raised that way. My kids are going to be raised that way, you know, seeing abuse or sometimes being targets of it. And so it's just the way the world is. But in fact, it's very harmful for children. And that's an important message. The second message is, it doesn't have to be this way. Because living a life where you're trying to control your family all of the time, where people are in pain, where people are in danger, is not a happy life. Not for the people who experience it, not really for the people who commit it either. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be this way, and there is help available. Those are the three messages that make the biggest difference.
At a conference recently, the Advocacy and Action Conference, mm-hmm. you made a presentation about batterers and intervention. And so I was wondering about why are we still talking about it? Why do we have to have discussions about it?
Yes, that's a really good question. Why isn't the case closed and we're just sort of going about our business? So in New Mexico, there are close to 40 programs, I believe, that are on a list of programs that we call approved. And that means that CYFD has gone in and reviewed the programs, the kind of work they do. We have standards, state standards, an administrative rule that outlines how these programs should operate. And of course, that's really important, right? Because you need some standards when you're talking about working with violent people, right? You want to know that quality is being preserved, right? So we have all of that. By state statute, programs must be 52 weeks in length, and that's because there is the belief that longer programs are better. And so it seems like it was all working okay. Mm-hmm. But in recent years, the question has arisen as to whether these programs are really effective. Now, the first thing is, that's a legitimate question. We really need to know whether these programs are making a difference, because if they aren't, we don't want to waste our time. And the question has also arisen as to whether the state's investment in these programs is worth it. Are they seeing a return on their investment? And that is also a legitimate question, because if the state's going to put money into something, they need to have some assurances that they aren't wasting the money and that it's working. So in recent years, that question about effectiveness has sort of risen to the fore. And here in New Mexico, about a year and a half ago, I was informed that at the legislative session, people were saying, Batter intervention programs don't work. And they said they had some kind of an evaluation to show that that was the case. So naturally, as the director of the state coalition, I was called to ask about that. And they said, what is this evaluation that has occurred that shows that these programs aren't working? And I said, I have no idea. I have not seen such a study. Let me find out. So I began to look into this, and I discovered that in other states, including now New Mexico, there was an organization called Results First or Budget First. It's a part of Pew Research, actually. And they go into states and they, you know, sort of look at the programs, you know, usually behavioral health or substance abuse, right, and now domestic violence, batterers intervention, and they look to see whether those programs are working and whether the state is getting their money back. And so they did that, and they concluded that it was not effective necessarily, that there wasn't a decent return on the investment that was being made. So I began working with the national batterers intervention community to have some conversations about what was going on. And the more we looked into it, the more we found that in other states, something similar was going on. So batterer intervention programs were being defunded and replaced with other programs.
Let me just break in for a minute. My recollection is that the programs are funded by, there's money that people pay when they pay their fines, and that's what goes to fund the program. So it isn't as though they have to put in general fund money exactly. And there's plenty of money that way, as I remember.
Yes, right. Well, I wouldn't say there's plenty of money, right? I think I could be wrong, but it's somewhere between $600,000 and maybe $1 million to fund all of these programs every year. But you're right, it comes from fines. And, of course, it's not enough, because you really want to be able to pay people who are working in these programs really well, and there's often not enough money to do that. So, yes, there is a decent pot of money, but more is needed.
Okay. The other question I have is, have you ever had a batterer say, prove to me that this program is going to work before I commit my time to it or commit my energy to it? Is it a question that batterers are worried about, or just the government?
I have never had a batterer say that to me, like, are you going to wave a magic wand and fix me up and I'm going to be different? I have never heard that. That is not to say that it has not been asked of people either here in New Mexico or elsewhere. I have no idea. Ordinarily, the reason that someone comes to a batterer's intervention program is because they have been ordered to come. Mm-hmm. Very few people come voluntarily for the reasons I just mentioned.
Okay. Let's go back to what you found, that this was happening in other states and that things were sort of changing in other states.
Right. So the what was happening is that there was a study that came out of Washington State. It was called a meta-analysis, which means a study of studies. And they looked at whether current batterers intervention programs worked. And they discovered, according to this study, that they didn't, that the type of batterer intervention program most commonly in use might not really be very effective. And so that's what happened. And it was that study then that was used to justify the dismantling or defunding or changing of batterers intervention programs in various places around the country.
And so you found that that was starting to happen here, or there was talk about it happening?
Yes, that was my concern. And so what I really wanted to know was, well, I wanted the chance for us to really explore fully all of the research and all of the issues surrounding batterers intervention in New Mexico. And fortunately, there were some really good people in state government who agreed that that should be done, right? We need to have the full story here, right? Because there was this one study, and that really wasn't enough, I didn't think, to justify making real significant changes in our infrastructure. So we developed a task force, and we had participation from national and international experts, many who came to New Mexico on their own dime, right? We didn't pay for anything. So New Mexico became ground zero for this exploration as to whether batter intervention programs really work. We wanted to know, what does the research really say? What is the evidence, in fact, about this?
Okay. So that's kind of exciting in one way. Where was CYFD on this? Were they supporting, looking into it? Were they enthusiastic about that?
Oh, absolutely. They were very enthusiastic. And we co-chaired. It was so the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence and CYFD acted as co-chairs of this. And CYFD participated in every meeting actively. And one of the things that came out of that meeting is that we are going to work even more closely now with CYFD to establish an advisory group to help us really think about what kinds of curriculum, what kind of programming, what kind of assessments, all of the things that go into the making of a batterers intervention program. We're going to be there to advise CYFD as to what is most likely to be effective here in New Mexico.
Okay. Do you have any idea why this came to New Mexico and why people started wondering about whether battering intervention was working or not?
You know, in fact, that was a question that we all had. And not just us in New Mexico, but batter intervention leaders from around the country and even some, you know, from around the world. The question was, batters intervention programs are kind of this small, little, esoteric kind of event, I guess, for want of a better word. And so we thought, why would anyone care, right? And especially in New Mexico, where the amount of money, right, it isn't general revenue, it's not very much money. So why would we sort of be on anyone's radar? That was the issue. And I can't say that I know for sure why that would be. I think that's a question that has to be asked is, and some consideration should be given to why that did come up. And who benefits from that, who doesn't benefit from that. One of the issues that really motivated the national batterers intervention groups was this. Our programs are based on an analysis of domestic violence as being gendered in nature, right? In other words, I mean, it's not always that way, but in general, it is a crime mostly against women. And we also know that a motivation is power and control, right? That's kind of the basis. And I don't think very many people would disagree with that. That probably makes sense to people. But the challenge that we were facing was that that was not the case and that that was not the reason why people committed domestic violence, that maybe it was something else. So I think what the batterers intervention community really wants is to be able to have some say about how their programs look. It's still a relatively new field, but it's not that new, right? For 40 years or so, right, we've been doing this kind of work and building on our knowledge, and there is some research to suggest that batterers intervention programs are effective for the majority of batterers. And there's a researcher named Ed Gondolf who has published extensively and has really found this batterers intervention programs to have a really positive effect. So it isn't fair and it isn't right to conclude that batterers intervention programs just don't work because we know that they, in some cases, they do. We need more research. Some of the research is mixed, but a blanket, they don't work, is probably misguided.
Okay. Is there anyone who's saying that it would be better not to do intervention and just get rid of the batter, that it would be better to just split up the families and get away from the violence? And why are we messing around with trying to fix it?
I'm sure there are people who say that, right? But I think mostly we understand that families are staying together. And they want help, and they need to have some resource to get that help.
Okay. It seems to me that the person who really has to believe in the program is the woman who has been the victim, because eventually if the batterer completes the program, then he's going to be back in the house, and she's trusting her future to that. So they're the ones that are the most at risk.
That's so important. Many victims, partners of the men who are in these groups, want to know, is there any chance that he will change?
Yeah.
Right? Is the chance good? Is it bad? Is there no hope? Mm-hmm. And one of the really important roles that batterer intervention programs play is they can help communicate that information to a partner or to a program that is working with that woman or that partner. Often when a batterer goes into a program and maybe spends 52 weeks, often it's less than that, and doesn't change, that's really good information for that partner, right? Well, at least I gave him a chance. He had a year to really think about this, and he didn't change. And so then maybe it would be appropriate for that person to leave, but it's never our decision to make. Whether people stay with batterers or they don't, it's not our decision, and we don't know the whole story, right? It is really, it's not for us to say, but I think it is for us to try to create the conditions under which people can change. If it's going to be possible, then let's really try to make that happen.
Okay. Are you looking at length of programs? That was an issue at some point, and I don't know if it's still an issue.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that longer programs work. And I know that the batterer intervention programs here in New Mexico really want that 52 weeks to remain. However, there isn't any research that I know of at this point to clearly show that 52 weeks is better than 26 weeks, which is the standard. That's not to say that it isn't better. It's only to say that the research isn't there yet. Mm-hmm. So I think it was very forward-looking of people in the state to want to make batterers intervention programs long. 52 weeks, it's not a very long time to change a lifetime of learned bad behavior. Mm-hmm. But it's sometimes a deterrent, I think, for defense attorneys who don't want to advise their clients that they should spend a year in a batterer intervention program, right? Because they have to go, you know, get to it, and they have to take time off work, maybe, and they have to pay. So there are some impediments, right? So I can understand both sides, right? Why some people think it should be shorter and why some people would like to keep it at the length we have currently.
Okay, so where are we now in New Mexico, and what are other people getting? You said that we were sort of being watched by everybody.
Yeah.
So where are we now?
So, right, as I said, we became ground zero for this exploration as to whether programs work or not. And we completed our task force last year. We wrote a report, which we hope to be presenting to one or more legislative committees. We also have formed a small group that will be advising CYFD going forward on what the standard should look like, what programs should look like, what kind of training people need in order to provide these programs, what kind of supervision, all of that. So it will be ongoing.
Okay. And do we still have these national experts who are working with the group, and are they watching what's happening?
So I am part of a national group, part of a steering committee of a national group of batterers intervention who are looking really at what the future ought to hold for how we do this work. So I'm still involved with them. They come and do trainings for us in the state. They've come to our conferences. So yes, there's a strong connection between all of us.
Okay. So I'm talking to Pam Wiseman, and she's the director of the Coalition Against Domestic Violence in New Mexico. So we may be kind of leading the way. Can we say that?
I guess we could say that. We certainly were the first to really try to make an issue out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because we saw the experience of other states, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were, before anything changed, that we had a chance to really look at everything to see how it was working. So, yeah, I think other states do see us as having led this effort.
Okay. And where are we in the timeline? When can we expect to come out with something, a result, or what? I don't know what we'll have.
We came out with some very short findings and recommendations already. They can be found on our website, nmcadv.org. And then we have a much longer version of the report, which we're still working on. But the essence of our findings and recommendations have been written down and are available.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the situation with domestic violence in New Mexico now. Can you say whether we're dealing with it? Is it getting better? Do we have enough resources? Give me a rundown.
So I think everyone wants to know, well, how does New Mexico rank, right? Are we first? Are we last? And I don't know that there's very much research really on rankings. And the fact is that it's bad in New Mexico and it's bad every place else. Is it getting better? I'm not sure. What I can say is that nationally, the trend is to really start looking at prevention. Mm. That's really what the future holds, right? How can we involve more people, lots more people, lots more organizations than we ever have in this work? And how can we be a part of the work that they're doing? So we're moving from seeing domestic violence work as kind of an isolated field to one that is a part of everything else, right? It's part of the whole. And so our coalition plans to reach out to lots of organizations across the state. What we want to know is, how can we help you with your agenda? Not what do we need to tell you about domestic violence, but how can we help you do what you need to do? Because all of this is connected.
So if people want to hear more about this and they're kind of worried about all these people that are coming into New Mexico and pushing things around, where did they find out the information?
So if they go to our website, nmcadv.org, we have there all of the recordings from all of the speakers who came to New Mexico to present on this topic. So many hours of experts, and that is, people can look at it, they can send it around, they can do whatever they want. Our reports are there. There's a lot of information about batterers intervention and what was happening and what is still happening in New Mexico on that site.
Okay. And can they find the report that says that batterers intervention doesn't work there?
The researchers for the study, the Washington State study, came to New Mexico and presented. And so all of their PowerPoints and their information and their talk was also recorded, and that is available.
Okay. And do you think that the reason New Mexico became ground zero was because you sort of said, hey, wait a minute, what's happening here? Or was it because we're this melting pot of different cultures and things?
I think it's because we said, wait a second, what's happening here? I was alarmed to hear that that so many people believe that batterer intervention programs don't work. And the people who do that work were also alarmed to hear that, because they don't get paid much, and most of them don't do it for the money, of course. They do it because they believe in what they're doing. So it's hard to hear, oh, nothing that you do really has mattered and doesn't make a difference, particularly when we knew there was just as much evidence to the contrary. So it's really because, right, we said, wait a second, let's find out what's really going on here, that New Mexico became ground zero.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.